Well, hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and Real Talk is the place where curiosity chases truth. The truth is that this is not another tired encore show because I am live in the Gene Both studio and sharing the captain's chair with Captain Joe Wubbold. Welcome, Captain Joe.
And Susan, I am delighted that we are finally able to do this program together. I have been surrounded my entire life by beautiful and strong women, and never so much as today as we do this broadcast together.
You may be sorry.
I won't be sorry at all.
And here's your
maybe
music.
You will be. And this is your Captain Joe, and I am in the captain's chair, but across from Susan. And Susan and I have talked about doing this broadcast together for a long time. She and I have been friends as long as I've lived on the island, which is almost 20 years, 20 years that we've been friends. We do not agree on many, many things, and we do not know where this program is going to go because it is, as always, from the captain's chair. It is unrehearsed and unscripted, and we on purpose did not spend a great deal of time figuring out what it was that we were going to talk about and how we were going to talk about it.
No, we just kind of hit general categories.
We hit general categories. And so my first general category, of course, is that I send my greetings around the world to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore to Stockholm. And then the second part of my opening is always the binnacle list, those who are on the sick list. Do you know why it's called the binnacle list, Susan?
No, I was going to ask that. I've always wondered about that word, binnacle. Oh. I love words.
All right. So it's called the binnacle list because in sailing ship days, the ship surgeon, who was the medical officer, would create a list of all of the people that would not be available to go to sail stations. And he would write this down on a piece of paper, and he would take it all the way back aft. And the binnacle is the stand on which the magnetic compass is mounted even today. And the list of people that were on the sick list would be hung off of the, I don't think it's on the list of things that we can't say, the quadrantal spheres are the adjusters for the for the compass, and they're called colloquially the navigator's balls. And so the... And so they are hung off of the binnacle. And so even today, centuries later, we still call it the binnacle list. So all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list, your Luke was on it for quite a while.
And he's off now.
And we're going to talk about that trip. And in fact, why don't we lead into that by talking about one of the things that you and I had wanted to talk about was our travels since during the summer. And I've got two trips that I want to describe, and I want to hear about yours with the trailer and the dog and Luke.
And Luke. But who is on the binnacle list? Do we need to address the binnacle list before we go forward?
What we are going to say today is, in particular, all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list and who choose not, for one reason or another, to broadcast their particular reason for being on the list. And so this is a section of my binnacle list, which is called You Know Who You Are. Because there are people who come to me, they send me signals, they send me messages in which they say, Captain Joe, we really appreciate the attention and the consideration of being on the binnacle list, but we just are not ready for the rest of the world to know what is going on. And I've had, in particular in the last month, I've had several people who have asked me to honor that particular confidence, and of course I always do that.
Well, yeah, you know, I can understand not wanting to be looked at as the person with the X disease.
Yes.
I'd rather be looked at as the person.
Yes, or the one who is recovering. and therefore moving off of the binnacle list. Of course, the other way to move off of the binnacle list is to cross the bar, and we do not. And we are always sad when that happens.
Yeah, you know, I prefer, personally, if I were on the binnacle list, and I'm not.
But you have been.
I have been.
Yes.
But I don't want to be defined by what's wrong with me. And I don't want my life to be defined by my illness. You got to find a place for it and put it there and move on.
So the purpose of the binnacle list is not to define anything. It is to provide a place where friends in my world, shipmates, people who in particular have gone to sea together, can be aware that one of their shipmates is at risk, and can, if they are of the prayerful persuasion, can include them in their prayers. If they are not of the prayerful persuasion, can include them in their thoughts, can maybe make a telephone call or make a visit. There have been a couple of times just in the last couple of months where friends were very close to crossing their own bar, and I was able to spend some time with them before. And so the binnacle list is not to define anybody's particular situation. It is so that their friends, their shipmates, their classmates know that they are at risk and they can act as is appropriate.
You know, over the years, one of the most admirable qualities I have seen in you, Captain Joe, is your connection to community and to family. What you call Captain Joe's people truly are your family. And you go to a lot of effort to keep those people connected and to let folks know that they are cared for, which is kind of a lost art in this world of social media and technological disconnection. So thank you for that.
That's very kind and gracious of you to say that, but that gives me the opening and the opportunity to point out and to remind you that I do not have a Facebook account. I have never looked at a Facebook page. I am like a purple cow. I hope to never see one. So but it's very kind and gracious of you to say that to me. To me, when you are given the privilege of having those connections, then you have the obligation to keep those connections not only alive, but flourishing.
Well, and that's, I'm going to guess, been part of your travels this summer. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with your trip in the trailer with Luke and the dog, because I'm going to use that to get to a parenthetical insertion of one of your favorite subjects, and that has to do with women who succeed. So so there's
that's
the teaser for you.
Intriguing.
Yes, you have to tell the story about the travel in the trailer.
I'll be curious to see how the segue goes.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
The travel
so
in the trailer.
So will I a little bit.
Yeah. My husband and our dog Nutmeg and I, my husband Luke and our dog Nutmeg and I, spent 30 days on the road this summer. Well, actually from May 15th to June something, June 20th, I think, in 130 square feet that we pulled behind our car over hill and dale from Northern California visiting friends to Southern California visiting family to Phoenix, Arizona. Don't go, visiting family, and back up through Utah and Nevada and Montana and Idaho, some incredible, incredibly beautiful country. Some excitement. The whole idea of dragging 3,500 pounds behind your car is a little nerve-wracking for me. I will admit I did not drive the car. I did not pull the trailer. As a kid, when I had horses, I used to pull trailers with horses in them and pigs in them and all kinds of stuff. But for some reason, this was just more than I felt like it, I could handle. So poor Luke had to do all the driving. But I did everything else, so it worked out. And it was fun. It was exciting. Like I said, we saw some incredible country. We had wonderful times with friends and family. It was very enriching. The trauma to our dog is just now coming into recovery. As a person of routine, the daily change of location and all the time in the car turns out to have been a bit much for her, but she's coming around again. And, you know, it was a bit much for me. We learned a lot of great lessons, not the least of which was 4 hours a day in the car is max, and one should not be in the car every day. So next trip we take will be shorter and we'll stay longer in one place.
So the trailer.
The trailer.
I'm aware of some of the idiosyncrasies of the trailer because you and I have talked about this before. Uh-huh. But I believe that we have come to the time with Captain Joe's people and with all of Susan's many Real Talk listeners for you to lay out some of the idiosyncrasies of the trailer which caused Nutmeg's disquietude and some of the other things that happened.
There were a few glitches along the way.
Yes.
One of them was that there's this padlock that goes onto the trailer hitch and attaches to the trailer and kind of locks things. That got lost one day. And my husband, who is the original MacGyver, or at least a follower thereof, decided to fix it with a wire and a screwdriver that he stuck in there.
Mm.
Which I, as not a very knowledgeable person and somewhat anxious, freaked out completely over it. And he said, yeah, we don't need to get another padlock. We'll be fine. And that screwdriver and wire held the trailer onto the car for the entire trip thereafter. So I had to eat crow on that one. The other was my darling husband had recently had spinal surgery. So a lot of the heavy lifting and moving around of the trailer and so forth fell on me, which was fine because for me, sitting in the car for a long time is the road to insanity. So getting out and doing and moving around is great. However, one day when we were camping in Malibu, not far from my L.A. children, fortunately, my younger son and his wife came to visit us by surprise for breakfast in the morning, and Luke was moving things around outside while I was inside the trailer, and I heard him very quietly say, "Susan," in a voice that I'd never heard before, and I heard Matt and his wife scrambling, and I came out to find that Luke had tripped over the toolbox and done a face plant onto a concrete block, one of those concrete parking logs, and was lying there and could not move. And he said, "I can't move," which of course threw me into a bit of a panic. I was so grateful that my son and his wife were there. They took over. They took care of the dog. Matt took care of Luke. And bottom line is, he got out with a big ugly bruise and a couple of shiners, but that was it.
So I saw a photograph of Luke face on right between the running lights not too long after this happened. And it was that moved Luke into an upper tier on the binnacle list because because it really looked to me like it was pretty serious.
It should have been. It should have been. And what the doctor, because he was paralyzed for, I'm going to say, 60 seconds or more, which was, it felt like an eternity. And what the doctors explained was that that was part of the impact of shock on his body. He did not have a concussion. He didn't have any brain issue. Nothing. No broken bones. It was pretty remarkable.
So the screwdriver and wire repair.
Yes.
One of the things that you learn in the service is that you use the appropriate tool and material for whatever the task at hand is. But when the appropriate tool or material is not there when you need it, then you improvise. And Coast Guard people, especially older hands, before the days of new ships, which we are now building, but in the days of older ships, of which I was fortunate enough to command two, older, much older ships, some very ingenious repairs were put into place. And I am almost certain that in at least one or two of my commands that there were times when the equivalent of the screwdriver and wire repair were used. So I give you a hearty well done on that. And is there, would you like to end your story about the trailer trip with the successful conclusion? Because then I will move into my first trip.
Sure. One of the exciting moments was when we were in the mountains in Montana, heading for a campsite, and were hit with a hailstorm, a massive hailstorm on these windy mountain roads where we couldn't actually, even before the hailstorm, see the edge and where it would take us. So we drove for a while in incredible hail coming down, and with the trailer swerving behind us, finally we found a place we could pull out and we waited. And all that was fine. Then we got to what turned out to be my favorite campsite. And that was a very quiet, not hooked up, not developed campsite. We had no electricity. We had to pump water into our trailer tank. We were right next to the Bitterroot River, which was flowing, rushing past us, and there was nobody else there. One other person showed up, turned out to be a lovely person we had great conversations with. And that turned out to be my favorite campsite. I'll go back there in a heartbeat because it was quiet. No Wi-Fi, no internet, no phone, no nothing. And Nutmeg loved it too. And so that was our last campsite. We stopped and visited friends in Spokane for a day. And headed home quite successfully, happy to be there.
And the trailer and the vehicle suffered no long-term adverse effects from...
No, it was surprising. There was a drawer that kept falling open, but that's really about it.
Has the wire and screwdriver been replaced by a proper repair?
No, not yet. We haven't taken it anywhere yet, so there's...
You mean it's still sitting there with wire and screwdriver?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right.
Luke is not a person who acts fast.
All right. So here is my first trip, at which I'm going to take your hand and lead you into one of your favorite subjects. While you and Luke and Nutmeg were trailering, I made a trip to Michigan. And Captain Joe's people know, and some of the people who are Captain Joe's people and who are listening to me served under my command in Michigan when I was the Coast Guard commander of a good part of Lake Superior and Lake Huron and Lake Michigan. And so I decided that I would go back and see some people that had been part of my life there. And one of the places where I went was Traverse City, Michigan.
I know it.
And if you know Traverse City, you know that it's the cherry capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And it is also a Coast Guard city. It has a Coast Guard air station. And I did my broadcast from the Coast Guard air station at Traverse City and had the commanding officer and the senior enlisted and the most junior enlisted come on the broadcast with me. And it was one of the best received of my broadcasts.
I would think so. That's pretty cool.
It was. It was
So what did you all talk about?
We talked about Coast Guard things. We talked about Coast Guard families, which are very important to me. All of my Coast Guard families were part of my people in all of my commands. And we talked about with the youngest enlisted person. He had just completed the qualification requirements for his aircrew wings, and he was wearing on his uniform the brightest, shiniest gold aircrew wings that I have ever seen in my whole life. And so
where exactly does that put him? Aircrew. I think of the Coast Guard as water. What's aircrew?
Aircrew is that he flies in the helicopters on rescue missions. He helps work the hoist, for example. He is a very important part of the crew, but he is also a flight mechanic. And so he helps maintain the machines, and then he flies in the machines that he helps maintain.
So that's incentive.
It is indeed an incentive. So we talked about all of those things. And at the end of the broadcast, it was just a wonderful time, and especially because I was able to talk to both the senior enlisted and the junior enlisted of all of the people in the crew. One of the things that we did was that we went to a farmer's market.
Oh.
And at this farmer's market, we're walking around, and I do not go quite as long as I used to without needing or wanting to sit down. And so there was a kiosk there with a chair, and in this chair was this great big stuffed dog. And so and the kiosk was being manned by, well, actually not manned, it was being staffed by this lovely young lady. And I said, lovely young lady, I will even hold the dog if I might be sitting down in the chair. And she said, not only may you sit in the chair, but if you don't want to, if you would be embarrassed of holding the stuffed dog, then you don't have to do that. And I said, no, I don't get embarrassed about things like that at all. Captains don't get embarrassed. And she said, well, what are you the captain of? And so we went on and talked about that. And it turned out that she has her own business, and this business is to make healthy dog treats.
Oh.
And so I bought a bag of these healthy dog treats.
You don't have a dog.
I don't have a dog. Well, actually, I have dogs that think I belong to them.
I see.
Yeah. So I brought a bag of this treat, and I'm giving it to you right now for nutmeg. And this one is, and her name is Megan.
Ah.
And so Megan and I began a new friendship.
Nice.
And I said, Megan, I'm buying a bag. It's not this bag. That bag is long gone. I'm buying a bag of your treats, and I'm taking them back to Vashon, Washington, and I'm going to try them out on these various dogs that I happen to know. And she said, Captain Joe, by now we're at Captain Joe and Megan level. She says, oh, Captain Joe, do you have a dog yourself? And I said, no, I don't have a dog myself. But I do have dogs that believe that I belong to them, and I have friends that have dogs. And so I'm going to buy a bag of these, and I will send you a report. So I took the bag of dog treats to the dump. And the reason I took them to the dump was that the dumpmeister is supposed to have dog treats to give out to the dogs as
they go through. Oh, okay.
So one of the dogs that believes that I belong to him goes with me to the dump when I take Little Brown Truck to the dump. And when the dumpmeister doesn't have any treats, I reach down under the seat of my truck and I bring out this treat and pretend as if it came from the guy in the kiosk. You see how this is working?
I see how this is working.
Yeah, right. And I give it to Mac, and he thinks that it comes from the dumpmeister. So I took the original bag. I gave them to Mac. He thought they were wonderful. I left some with the dumpmeister, so that bag's all gone. I was so pleased with the results of Best Friend's Kitchen Whole Dog Health and Nutrition, for that is the name of it, and with Megan, I sent her a signal back and I said, your product is a great success. And it's such a success that I'm buying some more. And I'm buying one which is Lean Mean Spinach Greens Dog Treats. And that's the bag that I'm handing over to you for you to try out on nutmeg.
And it says here the ingredients are flour, water, spinach, cottage cheese, and applesauce.
Yes. Nutmeg may not like them, in which case you can give them back and I'll find another dog that does.
Yeah, we'll do a test.
Okay. But the point here, in my usual circuitous and Byzantine way, my point is that Megan had another job, and she didn't like that job. And she decided that she wanted to do something that she really wanted to do. And what she really wanted to do was to create a line of healthy dog food and dog treats. And then she goes to this farmer's market. That's where I met her.
Uh-huh.
The price that I had to pay was sitting in that chair and holding the stuffed dog. Attracted a great deal of custom because I didn't just sit there and hold the dog. I actually gave the dog a voice and had people coming in. And
did anyone take a photo of this?
They did.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
I
think you should put that on the VOV website.
We're not going to do that. No, we're not going to do that.
So can we hear the dog's voice?
I'm giving it to you right now.
Oh, that was it?
That was it.
You didn't do the I'm the dog?
I did not.
Anything?
No, my voice.
Hi, everybody. Hi.
I did not do any of those things, Susan. I was the dog's voice.
You were the dog's voice.
The captain's voice was the dog's voice, and I sold a number of bags of healthy dog treats for Megan. So Megan and I now exchange emails back and forth, and I have bought some of her product. I give that to you with love. There it is.
Thank you. It's wonderful.
We're going to try it out. But the whole idea is here is a young lady who had a vision of what she really wanted to do in life. What she was doing in life, she didn't like. She wasn't going to do it anymore. And she took the risks that go with starting any kind of a business. And you know about that because you and I have been involved in
at least
one of your businesses.
Yes.
So do you have another trip to report it back?
Well, I can report on one that I'm going to take.
Let's hear about that one.
Which is really exciting. I don't know if everyone who's listening knows Pam Ingles. Pam Ingles is an island artist, very successful, very respected, and a close friend of mine. And she has asked me to produce a painting workshop for her in Italy. We've been working on this since the first of the year, and it's coming right up. The last 2 weeks of September, we will be in Antonomina, Italy, in the boot, in the province of Calabria.
In Calabria, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And for me, traveling, I used to travel around the world for my work on a regular basis, and I had packing down to a science. All of a sudden, it's a nightmare. And I'm trying to figure out how to pack in a tiny carry-on suitcase everything that I'll need for a little over 2 weeks, and my computer, and not smell bad while I'm over there. So if anybody out there has packing tips, please send them to me at, you can send it to susan.mccabe@voiceofajon.org. It's for Europe. And, other than that, I am really excited. It's a warmish place. They've had fires around there recently, but they're not getting into Antonomina. So that's what I'm doing next. And it will be 7 days of painting for the artists who have enrolled in the workshop. My job is to make sure everybody's happy.
Well, you are highly skilled at that. I cannot imagine anyone that would be a more enjoyable person both for whom to work and with whom to travel than Pam.
Oh.
My Pam Ingles story is that she, about 3 years ago, did a series of portraits of what she labeled as Vashon heroes. Mm-hmm. And not too long after Mary R. died, she called me up and she said, it's taken me too long to call you. Pam and I have been friends as well for a number of years. And so she said, it's taken me too long to make this call, but I'm making the call now. And we talked a little bit about Mary R. And we talked about how all of that had happened. And then she said, did you know that I did a portrait of you? And I said, no, I did not know that. I did not sit for you. And she said, there was a series of portraits that was called the Vashon Heroes. And somebody by mistake nominated you. And
She did not.
I said, I'm saying
said
it that.
Yeah.
I'm putting that. That's a parenthetical insertion of my own.
Uh-huh.
And she said somebody had nominated you. And so I went ahead and painted a portrait of you from photographs. And I said, I sure want to see that. Or maybe I don't want to see that. And so she said, I will send you a print and you take a look at it. And so I looked at the print and my reaction was that she was very kind and very gracious to the subject of that particular portrait. And I decided that I, in a run of self-aggrandizement and selfishness, that I wanted to own it. And so I bought it. And I did it at a gathering of my road family, all of the people that live on my private road, which you've been down there.
Uh-huh.
People who are very close to me, they are all friends of family rank. And so I had a party at which I was going to publicly buy the portrait so that people would get the idea that you could buy Pam Engel's paintings. And Pam and Michael came, and all of the Road family was there. We had just a great evening around it, and a little ceremony of presenting the portrait and my giving her the money. And she said, and because you're the subject of it, you get a discount. Did you know that you can get a Pam Engel's discount?
No, she's never. I've known her for years. She's been one of my closest friends, and she's never given me a discount on anything.
Are you giving her a discount on your fees for this work that you're doing for her?
No.
No. All right. So anyway, I think that that's a great project, and I look forward to having your report.
Well, one of the comments you made is interesting to me. Because you said Pam was kind to the subject.
Yes.
And she and I have talked at great length over the years about the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
She's gone back and forth on painting portraits because she found herself at one point painting to make the subject happy, which is not the best way to make art.
I wouldn't think so,
no. Which we both agreed. I, as a writer, have to fight the notion of writing my essays for my audience rather than for the truth of the art. And both Pam and I agree that good art comes out of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so what she sees, she paints the portrait that she sees of the person that she sees. And what I see in her portraiture is that she brings out personality traits and character traits in each of the portraits that wouldn't come with a photograph. And it makes them all the more beautiful. So when you looked at it and you saw that there was grace there for you, clearly she was bringing out the grace within you in the portrait.
I think what she was doing was that she was embellishing based on our friendship, that she embellished what she saw.
She didn't want you to see what you really look like? Is
yes,
that what you're saying?
Right. Uh-huh. And of course, Mary R. never saw that portrait. And mm-hmm. I would really have liked, well, there are lots of things, but I would really have liked for her to have seen that and heard what her reaction would have been. Anyway, I look forward to your report when you come back from that.
Oh, yeah, it'll be fun.
And what I would like to do is a report with the two of you together.
Sure.
And we can do a broadcast together.
That is assuming that we're still friends when we come back.
That
we're going to be sharing a room for 14 days.
Wow. Yes, that might do it. That might do it. All right, so here's my second, it's not a travel story, but it does talk about another young lady who did not like what she was doing and formed up a business, and from which I have gained another one of Captain Joe's people. So I do tours out at the lighthouse.
Yes.
And the tours this summer have been particularly enjoyable and particularly edifying to me because so many people have come and they end up wanting to talk about things besides this lighthouse is 100 years old and it still has its fifth order Fresnel lens in it. And we end up talking about all kinds of really interesting things. And in particular, do I enjoy when I have the children. I had a young lady that I'm going to talk about if we have time for it in this from this last Sunday. But so one of the people that came out several weeks ago was a young lady, young to me, but I guess maybe she's in her early 40s, something like that. And she was with her husband, and they had come on motorcycles, and they had decided on as a last-minute thing to come on the magical Isle of Vashon. They just got up the ferry, said, we've never been over there before, let's go over, and they then came out to the lighthouse.
Are they from Seattle?
No, they are from Granite Falls.
Cool.
Yes, cool. So... So anyway, so we were talking about lighthouses, and I gave her the lighthouse poster that has all the lighthouses in Washington State. And I said, now you go to each one of these lighthouses and get either a stamp or somebody to sign off on it, and then come on the 3rd of December, which is open house out at Point Robinson, and you're to report back to the captain as to how many of these lighthouses you've been able to go to. And somehow or other, then the discussion moved on to this business. And she said, Captain Joe, I have, and we had gotten to that point with her. Her name is Anastasia.
Oh, I love that name.
And she said, my whole high school years, I was called Stacy. And then when I got my own business, I decided that I wanted to be called by my real name, Anastasia. And I said, well done, sweetheart. You have really gotten my, you will always be Anastasia to me and never Stacy. So she said, I was doing things that I didn't want to do. And I was really unhappy. And I did a lot of camping. And then I met Aaron, my husband, who was with her. And we started doing a lot of hiking and camping. And she said, I noticed that there was a lot of toilet paper left around all of these campsites.
Ew.
And that it was left there mostly by those who squat to pee.
Oh.
And so I created this Kula cloth. I'm not going to get in. I did a broadcast in which I was a little bit more graphic about this, but I did not have a young lady across from me at the time.
May I guess when you say Kula cloth?
Yes.
This is
you may guess.
This is something for women.
Yes.
Or when people of the female persuasion.
Yes.
Who need to squat.
Yes.
To urinate.
Yes.
And this somehow captures.
Yes.
The. Product.
Honey, you've got it exactly right. That's exactly what it does.
What do you do with it after that?
You put it into your, you wrap it up and you put it in your backpack and then you wash it.
Oh, it's washable.
Oh, indeed it
is. Reusable.
It is.
Oh, man, that is great.
So anyway, she calls this the Kula cloth. You can go on to her website. Just type in Kula cloth.
Is that with a K or a C?
K. Kula. She claims that the word Kula means community. I'm not so sure about that. I don't know what language it's in. She says Hawaiian, but I don't think it's... Anyway, that's beside the point.
What's community got to do with it?
Because honestly, if you use a Kula cloth, you are part of the Kula community.
Oh, I see. Cool.
So another...
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
No, I wanted to block you before you got to that, but I was too late. So anyway, then another thing she does is that she plays the violin herself. She plays the violin herself. And she has a friend who plays the keyboard. And so they load the violin and the keyboard into their backpacks. And they load formal gowns into their backpacks. And they go up into the mountains, and they play and sing. They take some way of photographing all of this, probably just like an Andy phone.
Sure.
So anyway, they go up, just the two of them. They go up into the mountains. They put on these gowns. They play and sing. And one of the ones that they played and sang for a film clip that I saw was Amazing Grace.
Oh.
In these gowns.
Oh.
In the mountains at sunrise.
Oh, my God.
This is my Anastasia. This is my friend Anastasia.
How simply beautiful.
So she has converted her life from doing crappy stuff in a crappy way that she was really unhappy with. And she figured out what was the right thing for her. And one of the things she figured out was this Kula cloth thing, which is now expanded into a line of other similar products.
Oh, that was my next question.
Related equipment. And so
does she sell online exclusively, or is she?
No, she does not sell online exclusively. Now, if you are an REI person.
That was my question.
You may go to REI. I did a reconnaissance on the ground here, and I discovered that
Northwest Sports?
Northwest Sports and the and the hardware store, not Ace, but the other one.
Oh, Island?
Island Lumber. Island Lumber. Both of them sell all kinds of camping gear. They do not sell the Kula cloth.
Oh.
So my next signal to Anastasia is to tell her that she needs to come to the back to the magical Isle of Vashon and hit those people up and have them carry this particular product.
This is so fascinating. And one of the things that I always think about when I hear these great stories of people who have taken a great idea and made it a business is it's one thing to create dog cookies that are healthy. It's one thing to create a Kula cloth that works. It's another to actually mass produce it, manufacture it, package it, distribute it, and try to, and I'm going to assume both these women did, try to keep that environmentally conscious.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Because all those processes can have huge carbon footprints, particularly the shipping. So I'd be curious to know exactly what Anastasia's process has been from this is a great idea to this is a business that has expanded to include other products. Same is true of Megan with her cookies. These are fascinating, strong, intelligent people who have multiple talents. It takes a certain amount of talent to create something. It takes different talents to manufacture, to contract, to produce, and to promote and distribute something. You know, how many small businesses actually get to that point?
The line of reasoning that you're using with Anastasia, I happen to know because I have now signed on to her. Is it a blog or
blog
something?
Post? Mm-hmm. Could be.
What's the one that you run?
Substack. I'm on Substack.
Right.
It's called Hot Flashes, Cold Showers.
Right.
That's my plug.
Are you? By the way, are you going to allow people to financially support that?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, anyway, Anastasia does one on Substack that she does allow us, and I have subscribed financially. And so some of the answers to the questions that you're asking, she puts out. So in particular with Anastasia, did not get to this point yet with Megan, but in particular with Anastasia, we got to the subject of what do you do when you feel like everything is crowding in on you and you are thinking about quitting?
Oh, good one.
And so I told her the story about a teacher that had come into Point Robinson a couple of weeks before she was there with Aaron. And that conversation went into the idea of, Captain Joe, I am thinking about leaving the profession.
Alone.
And I said, well, how long have you been in it? And she said, this is my second year. Oh. What ages are you teaching? And I started out teaching the sixth grade, and now I'm teaching fifth grade. And I said, okay, all right. You are doing such important work that you have gotten the training and the education and the licensing and the certification. You've done all of that hard work. And you need to get through your second year and your third year. And so we do not give up the ship. We do not quit. We keep on going. And so we talked at some length. And by this time, the crowd of people that was in the lighthouse had picked up that was something going on here besides just there's a fifth order Fresnel lens up at the top of the up the top of the tower, and I can't take you up to the top of the tower right now. So that something else was going on. And so we had about 20 people gathered around us, and all of these people were getting into this conversation. I had to, at one point, impose a little bit of discipline. I said, nobody interrupts the captain.
And I was just thinking about interrupting the captain.
And I knew you were. I could see it coming. And the captain does not get to interrupt anybody else. It works both ways. So anyway, all of these people were gathered around, and we were, and this was the, and so when she left, she turned around and she said, thank you, Captain Joe. I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep going. But I'll remember about don't give up the ship.
So and my curiosity is
piqued. Go ahead.
Because the other two women you spoke about were women who were doing things they didn't like and found a different path.
Yes.
So my curiosity about the teacher is, yes, we need good teachers, and a lot of teachers are leaving. Did she say why she wanted to leave? Was it because of the system, or was it because that she just didn't like teaching or didn't have the confidence to actually teach?
Right.
What was her reason?
So the answer to that question, and of course I asked that question, and she said, Captain Joe, it is just so hard. It is hard. The children are hard. And I said, well, those are hard years, sixth grade.
Fifth and sixth grade. Just talking puberty.
Right, puberty, all of those things happening. I didn't even say the word puberty because that's when it happens.
Yeah.
So I said, sure. And I said, lots of things in life are hard. You want to do a Pacific typhoon? You want to break into McMurdo with 20-foot ice? You don't get to quit. And teachers really who have the introspection and the sensitivity to feel wrong about wanting to quit. They know in their heart that it's not the right thing to quit.
Well, that might be a clue for her not quitting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if somebody doesn't like what they're doing, they're not going to be good at it.
She was liking it.
Oh.
She was liking what she was doing, but it was so hard.
Uh-huh.
And she disliked the confrontations that you have with sixth grade and fifth grade kids. So I said, okay, there's some things that that you can learn about how you deal with those things. But you in particular, Missy, you don't get to quit.
And, you know, that speaks so much to the larger issue of the status of teachers in this country everywhere,
mm-hmm.
that it is hard and they don't get much support and they certainly don't get paid well. As we all know, our teachers here on Vashon don't get paid enough to actually live on the island,
mm-hmm.
which gets to a whole other subject about affordable housing. But I think good teachers are critical to the health of our society, and we need to do everything we can to support them. And the good teachers are the ones who have the intestinal fortitude to stick it out. And it is hard. It's hard. It's demanding. It's long hours. It's not much payback unless you thrive on, and I think a lot of them do, thrive on seeing children grow and succeed as humans.
Mm-hmm. So what I did say to her was a practical thing. The practical thing is you find somebody that you, when the time comes and you are starting to feel like you want to trade in your teacher's license to become an automobile mechanic or to do something else, go find somebody who is a experienced, surviving teacher, not an administrator, but somebody who is still in the trenches with the kids, and talk to that person, have some drinks with that person.
That's great advice.
And I said, you can, and I gave her my email address, and I said, if you ever want to, you can shoot me a message and I'll send you a strengthening message. Because we do not give up the ship, Susan.
And I think, I don't know about you, but as a younger person, one has dreams and you head for those dreams, whether it's a career or a family or child rearing. And if we all knew what it was actually going to take, most of us would be frozen in the corner sucking our thumbs. But you get thrown into life, mm-hmm. and you find out what you're made of.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And one can learn the depths of their strength. And mm-hmm. I just listened to a story on NPR about a teacher, I believe is a teacher, who is also a mountain climber and chose to climb all the highest peaks in the Cascades and bicycle from one to the other. Think about the physical fitness that requires. And he talked about how exhausted he was and how he fell asleep on his bicycle sometimes, but he kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And what an incredible example that is of both environmental commitment and perseverance, jiminy.
So those are two ladies who found that they did not like the way their life was going.
Mm-hmm.
And they did something about it. And not only did they do something about it, but the something that they did was to fulfill something that was really important to them in their thinking about their lives. If you go on to Anastasia's website, I believe that there is a link to the film clip that shows her and her friend Robin at the top of the mountain wearing these ball gowns and playing Amazing Grace on instruments that they have carried up there and being photographed by some equipment that they carried. They carried everything up there. And if you feel, if you're feeling down sometimes, and I know that sometimes you do,
we all do.
If you're feeling down sometime and you want to be lifted up, it is just a lovely, lovely piece. I did not have time with to find out from Megan what her particular uplifting thing was. But I'll bet you that there is one, because here's another gal that is doing exactly what she wants. She's making a living at it. Whether it's a good living or not, I'm not sure yet. I'm helping by, there, I bought a bag for your dog. But the point is that that both of these women are have seen and decided and then done.
Yes, and creatively.
And creatively.
Throwing that kind of creativity into your life, playing music in ball gowns at the top of a mountain. Wow, that is incredible. And that shows a freedom of spirit that I think supports entrepreneurship and creative efforts in that direction.
Are you busy in your work right now? Not counting the trip with Pam to Italy?
Well, you know, that's just part of it. I'm at a point where I can choose the work that I want to do. I'm not raising children anymore. I don't have to make a lot of money, and I'm not. So, yeah, I get to choose what I'm doing. So I'm doing a lot of writing. I get to write for some clients I really care about. Habitat for Humanity is one of them.
Mm.
Wonderful organization. And then, of course, I'm doing my own writing. And then the occasional production, like The Party for Mary R.
Yes.
And the workshop for Pam. So I'm kind of open to whatever comes along and having a great time at it.
So what is the name of the platform again that...
The platform is Substack.
Substack, right. I have trouble remembering.
Right. That. The title of my weekly blog, it's currently weekly, is Hot Flashes, Cold Showers. Hot Flashes, well, hopefully that's self-explanatory, but it's educational moments in one's life. Some of them are ahas, and some of them are, oh my gosh, I'm the problem.
So I read Hot Flashes every week. And because I am very much aware of many of the things that you write about, I may even have been involved at one time or another in some of it. But because I know you and I love you, I have a personal connection to that one. And so should you ever decide to have a subscription system, I will be one of your first applicants.
To pay, you mean a paid subscription?
Yes.
Yeah, right now it's free, folks. You can sign up for free.
Okay. But if you want to go to Anastasia's, and I don't know exactly what, I don't remember what she calls that, but...
I bet I can find it.
But I'm sure it's easy to find. You go on to Substack and then type in Anastasia and...
Do you know her last name?
I don't right
okay.
now.
Okay, but it might even come with cool cloth. But
yes.
Yeah.
That's where you find it.
Yeah.
So we have 1 minute left.
1 minute?
That's what I've got on my...
Boy, you're absolutely right. I was looking at the wrong clock.
On my watch, okay. I have 1 minute left.
Okay.
So it is for you to give your parting remarks. And then I get to make mine so that we end up exactly at two bells of the afternoon watch, 1,300 hours.
Okay, that means we each get 30 seconds, right?
We each get 30 seconds,
let's see
yes.
how good we are in timing this. Well, I just want to say thank you. This was your idea. It's a wonderful idea. It's been so much fun. And I want to tell everyone out there that I have been privileged to watch Captain Joe Webbold evolve over the years. I've watched him change his ideas about particularly social and cultural things, and I've always known him to have an open heart. So I'm glad to have been part of all that and to have been able to observe that as your friend.
And for me, Susan gave an example of our relationship when I wanted to do not only just a memorial for Mary R., but also a big party. And I asked Susan to help me put that together. Well, she not only helped me, but she did it. And I my part in it was just to say, I approve everything you're doing. You're doing just a lovely job. And it was a wonderful party. And it rained the day that happened, which I interpreted as being a free freshwater washdown from the heaven. So this is, as always, with much love to Susan, my friend across from me. We will do this again when she comes back from Italy with Pam. And this is your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, I am up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly.